Let's just start with some prayer. Holy Spirit, help. Give us open hearts, open ears, and a quick speaker. Amen. We're going to be looking at John 6, 1 to 15. But before we start that, this was a place I called home for 32 years. So I grew up from being dedicated here to leaving here as a married man with two children. A third child who sat at the back joined us when we moved to Fleet, and I bring greetings from Fleet Baptist Church, where I've been for the last 22 years. So it's good to be back. It's good to see faces that I remember. It's good to see things like the perspex in the balcony, because Nanny, Mum, gave our eldest son M&Ms one Sunday morning, and he got slightly excited and tried to climb through the gap. Yeah. Thanks, Mum. But Croydon's a place that's dear to my heart, mainly because Crystal Palace play here. Yeah. I did notice a number of Crystal Palace shirts around, and God is showing favour on the team at the moment. So when people say, where are you from, Mark? It's from Croydon, the home of Crystal Palace, but I'm currently living in Fleet. And then times when people ask you questions about you, you know, it's, you need to have topics that are easy to engage with. So I say things like, I go running, and I run most mornings. I went out this morning for a 3-mile run just because the dogs need to go out. And that's the other thing that I like, is dogs. So this dog is a famous dog, but I don't know if anyone knows who this dog is. It's not Shep. Similar sort of era. Lassie, not quite Lassie. Timmy's not down the well in this one. He found the World Cup. This is Pickles. This is Pickles. And this is Pickles' own. It's not, that's not Pickles, because Pickles died just after he found the World Cup. So 27th of March, 1966, World Cup has come to England. England have shown off the Jules Rimet trophy in a stamp exhibition, and two blokes came in and nicked the trophy. And there was, where is this trophy? We need to find the trophy because the World Cup is coming up. Dave Corbett lived in Norwood, so not too far from here. And on the 27th of March, Dave needed to go and make a phone call. So these are the days before, not only mobile phones, but phones in the home. Dave left the house, went out to make a phone call with Pickles, the dog next to him. And as he was on the phone, Pickles is scrabbling around a car with showing interest, as dogs do. And Dave finished the call, went and to get the dog, and the dog was playing with this thing wrapped in newspaper under the car. So Dave picked it up, pulled open the edge of the newspaper, and saw engraved in the bottom the words Brazil, West Germany, and Uruguay. So he tore the other end off and saw a lady holding a shallow dish and thought, ooh, this could be the World Cup. So he went along to the local police station and said to the person on the desk, I think I found the World Cup, and gave him this thing wrapped in newspaper. And apparently the officer said, it doesn't look very well cuppy to me, son. The reason I start with that story is that Pickles made it to the news. Pickles became a bit of a celebrity. But Pickles did nothing special except he was a dog, doing what dogs do. He didn't set out that night looking to find the World Cup. He went out that night because his owner was going to make a phone call, and he was doing what dogs do. But he found something that changed. Well, it made him famous. It gave his owner enough money to buy a house in Lingfield, and then Pickles ran after a cat and died just after. It is sad, but he was doing what dogs do. Pickles was clever in some respects and less so in others. Sometimes God gives his people special tasks and purposes to do. Sometimes he gives us responsibilities and roles. And other times, we just happened to be in the right place at the right time, doing what we were going to do any case. And God uses us. Before we get into reading the reading, one of the things I love doing at church in Fleet is the Alpha course. And I love doing it because you see that moment where people go from a skeptic and really anti to beginning to wonder whether there's something there, to that moment of, I've encountered Jesus. And I see changes in the faces. I see changes in the attitude. I see changes in life. But one of the questions that comes up when we do the Bible week is, how do I read the Bible? Where do I start? And when you say you start in the middle, they get really confused. And isn't that like cheating? You know, aren't we reading the answer before, you know, it's like a book. We don't start at the last page. And we say, yeah, no, that's okay. That's good. But one of the techniques we teach around reading the Bible is called the Discovery Bible Study Process, the DBS process. And the way that works is when you read a passage, you put yourself into the character situation. For example, at Easter time, we read the story about Jesus sending his disciples off to go and get the young colt that's never been ridden. If you put that in today's language, it would be like me saying, Chris, do you mind going down to Woodside Timber? There's a brand new transit truck there. And say, I'm going to take this because the master needs it. How would the people have responded? What would the owner have said? And we just read this. The disciples went off and got this unridden colt, which was a beast of burden. It's the first time it was used. It was like brand shiny new, plastic wrappers on the seats and everything. And they take it off and give it to Jesus. So sometimes when we read the Bible, we get so familiar with the story, we forget to understand what it tells us. So as we work through this story, put yourself in the position of some of those characters we come across. My eyes are even worse than Liberty, so I'm going to look up here as we read this. After this, Jesus went to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, also called the Sea of Tiberias. A large crowd kept following him, because they saw the signs that he was doing for the sick. Jesus went up the mountain and sat down there with his disciples. Now the Passover, the festival of the Jews, was near. When he looked up and saw a large crowd coming towards him, Jesus said to Philip, "Where are we to buy bread for these people to eat?" He said this to test him, for he himself knew what he was going to do. Philip answered him, 6 months' wages would not buy enough bread for each of them to get a little. One of the disciples, Andrew, Simon Peter's brother, said to him, "There is a boy here who has 5 barley loaves and 2 fish. But what are they among so many people?" Jesus said, "Make the people sit down." There was a great deal of grass in the place, so they sat down, about 5,000 in all. Then Jesus took the loaves, and when he had given thanks, he distributed to them, to those who were seated, also to the fish, as much as they wanted. When they were satisfied, he told his disciples, "Gather up the fragments left over, so that nothing may be lost." So they gathered them up, and from the fragments of 5 barley loaves left by those who had eaten, they filled 12 baskets. When the people saw the sign that he had done, they began to say, "This indeed is a prophet who has come into the world." Okay. So go and do likewise. I think you brought a cake in. Yeah, so there's a cake. So if someone would like to go and pray for that, and then we can feed not only everyone here today, but out into the streets. In the character of the story, there are a number of characters that came up. And what I want to do is to work through what it was like for each of those characters and what that can teach us today in Woodside, in South Norwood, in Croydon, wherever you may be, wherever your position is. We're going to start off with the crowd. Everyone here can relate to one of the characters we're going to look at. If nothing else, you are part of the crowd today. The crowd came because they were interested in what was going on. Some of them were following Jesus. Some of them wanted to be healed by Jesus. Some of them were curious about Jesus. Some of them wanted to argue with him. Some of them wanted to prove him wrong. Some of them got dragged along by their parents or carried along by their parents. But the crowd had these people in them. The crowd were made up of Pharisees and the curious. And when we're thinking about those characteristics of the people in the crowd, how are you coming today? What attitude are you coming with? Are you coming because you want to be where Jesus is? Are you coming because you want to follow him? Are you coming because you're curious? Are you coming because you've been dragged along? Are you coming out of habit? Are you coming because you're inquiring? Or are you coming because you're hungry? The next characters in the crowd are the disciples, the ones that were just doing it. These are the ones who aren't names, but the ones who are just doing what Jesus had asked them to do. And when I think about this, when I put myself in the disciples' shoes, it's with one of those, what would I do? I see this, Andrew's bringing this small packed lunch up, and Jesus is saying to me, break them up into groups of 50s and 100s and get them to sit down on the grass. Where would I put different people? And clearly the group closest to Jesus would have been the ones I want to get fed first. So the powerful or the influential or my mates. For some of these, this was back in Galilee, so he would have been family members there. Mum, come and sit here. You need to get some food. And over there at the very far end, that's where we put the Pharisees. That's where we put the awkward ones. That's where we put the ones that we just don't want to be near. And the disciples are separating this out. And how would you be thinking as a disciple when Jesus says, sit them down, I want you to feed them. When you start handing out that bread and fish, how much would you give to the people at the beginning? What would it have been like? And what they did was just do it. They obeyed him even when it appeared to be difficult. And sometimes in church we do things and we don't see the benefit. We don't see the miraculous. We don't see the outcome. Over the years, many people taught me Sunday school from Mrs. Hemsley and Mrs. White, Mr. Cossell, Keith, had me in JUCOs for many years, John Fleer, and Wilf, and then there was Howard and Phil doing YP for me. None of them saw anything except a lad with a bit of a bad sense of humour who liked to have a bit of a laugh, who didn't really seem to take anything in. But the seed that they sowed, that constant sacrifice that they gave, paid off. And actually, I took on some of that Sunday school stuff and taught a certain young man over here in Sunday school for a number of years with his friends, who was far easier to teach than I have been, I'm certain. Yeah. Thanks, Chris. Yeah. But sometimes as disciples, we do things and we don't see the end result. These disciples saw the end result. They saw the miraculous increase. But for us, we don't see that. And sometimes it's too late. A number of those people I've named have gone. They're now with Jesus. And they'll know what it's like, but they haven't seen it. I haven't been able to go back to them to thank them for what they invested in me. But they did. And they did it diligently. We then get into the two named disciples. Philip was the one who Jesus collared. Philip, where are we going to get enough food for these crowd? And Philip answered as a realist. If we had 6 months' wages, we wouldn't have enough food to give them even a tiny bit. And Jesus, there's no Costco down the road. And Marks and Spencers are good, but they're not that good. And actually, how am I going to carry all this stuff back here? And all of this testing was real. It was based on experience. It was based on wisdom. But Philip was being tested. In our lives, at times, we are tested. At times, that testing feels impossible. At times, you think, I haven't got the resource to achieve this. I haven't got enough to give what I need to give. But Philip misunderstood what Jesus had said. Jesus said to Philip, where will we get enough food? And Philip's response was, I haven't got enough money to go and get the food. Jesus says, we, and Philip responds with, I. When God tests you, he doesn't test you to do it alone. This is a God who sends the fourth man into the fire to be standing with you when you're being tested. This is the God who doesn't shout from the touch lines or in the technical box, but jumps on the pitch and joins in. Sometimes we can associate with that character of Philip because we're being tested. But we fail to look for where God is providing the answer. The next disciple named is Andrew. Andrew is one of those characters that I've got a soft spot for. Because I went to St. Andrew's School every 1st of November. Was it the 1st of November then? 30th of October? Yeah. Yeah, I don't remember the day of it. I just remembered I got a day off school. So Andrew has a soft spot in my heart. But in the Bible, Andrew doesn't actually do a lot. He doesn't bring a lot. He doesn't contribute a lot, but he brings and contributes masses. He's a bit like that one who's always on the outside. There are three occasions in John where we have an understanding of Andrew. The first in John 1, where Andrew is a disciple of John the Baptist. John the Baptist says, there's Jesus, he's the chosen one, and Andrew goes to follow him. And what does Andrew do? He goes and brings Peter, his brother, to Jesus. And Peter then becomes one of the three, James, John and Peter. The next time we hear about Andrew is in this story. He doesn't mug the kid and say, hey, give me your packed lunch, I'm going to take your stuff to Jesus. With trepidation he brings and says, Jesus, I don't know what we're going to do, but here's a lad. Andrew was a local. It may be he knew this lad. It might have been his brother. It might have been his next door neighbour. We don't know who he was. But Andrew brings a lad along and brings him to Jesus. And in bringing the lad to Jesus, the miracle happens. The next time we hear about Andrew is later in John 12, just before Passover. And there are some Greeks that have come to Jerusalem. And Andrew brings the Greeks to Jesus. And Jesus reveals the truth to the Greeks. Andrew is significant for being a bringer of people rather than for what he does himself. So, Andrew has a university named after him. He has some churches named after him. He has the schools named after him. He's also the punchline of a really good South London joke. Is that picture printed? No, it's Andrew. There is no such thing as bad humour. There's just undeveloped appreciation. So if there is prayer ministry later, and you didn't get that, Andrew. Yeah, okay. All right, I'll just leave it there. It was too good not to leave in. Forgive me. But the final character is the lad, the boy. In this story, the boy is insignificant. He doesn't get counted in the 5,000. Different commentators say that there are 5,000, whether 10,000 or 20,000 or 25,000 people, because they only counted the men. I don't know how many people there were, but I know the Bible says there was at least 5,001. And that one lad wasn't counted. Some of you may resonate with this lad who is overlooked, who is not seen, who is not counted, who feels neglected, who feels not important. But without him, this story doesn't work. And what did he do? He said, yeah, my mum's packed a packed lunch. And that's another one who isn't mentioned in this story. His mum has done the food for him because it wouldn't have been the boy. Having brought up three boys, there is no way that a boy would have gone out and done his own packed lunch. You know, that's just, there's miracles and there's the impossible. So his mum would have done the packed lunch. She doesn't get mentioned in this at all. But without her, without him, without that provision, Jesus wouldn't have done the miracle. We wouldn't be thinking about this morning. Now, whether he liked his packed lunch or not, we don't know. It might have been quite a willing giver of, you know, fish and bread again. Always fish and bread. You know, you can have this. But Jesus does something with it. The lad gives self-sacrificially. He gives what he has. And for him, it's everything. For the problem, it's nothing. For those who are there, the 5,000, five bits of bread, two tiny fish, what are we going to do with this? But that's where Jesus then steps in. So what do we do with this characters in this story? How do we take that? How do we think about that? What's the takeaway for this? If you're in the crowd and you're just curious about Jesus, then what's your choice? Have you come here because you've been dragged along? Have you come here because this is what we do on a Sunday morning? Have you come because you're curious? Have you come because you need a touch from the King? Have you come because there's hurt? And if there is, don't go the same way that you came. Find someone to pray with. Prayer costs you absolutely nothing, but it changes absolutely everything. It's the one thing that we can give for free. All it costs us is a bit of time, a little bit of bravery, but it will change the world. Do you feel like a disciple, that you're doing the same thing again and again and again, and you don't see the results, you don't see the outcomes? Do you feel like Philip, that you're being tested, that you're being challenged, that God has put something on your heart that there is an impossibility to achieve? Philip tried to deal with the problem by himself under his own worldly response. When Jesus got involved, the results came. If you are facing a challenge or a problem, don't go without having that problem brought to Jesus. Do you feel like an Andrew, that you're always on the sideline, that it's always happening to someone else and never to you, that you're feeling underappreciated? Or do you feel like a boy who hasn't got much to offer, but prepared to give it? I want to introduce you to three different people. I've got four different stories, but three different people. I know there's only two pictures of people up there, but one of them unfortunately died before I could take a photo. But over here is my friend Pam. Pam is someone who carries the joy of Jesus with her. She used to be a teacher. Her husband led a church. He died. She had to sell up the house and moved into a masonette overlooking a road. And every morning during the school term, Pam opens the curtains and sits by the window and sits there. And she has got a ministry that I call the Madagascar Penguins Ministry. She smiles and waves, smile and wave. And every morning without fail, she sits there and smiles and waves. Now, she thinks it achieves nothing. For her, it's good to have that interaction with the world that goes by. Just before the summer holidays, Pam went on a week's holiday, and Facebook in the community blew up. What has happened to that lovely old lady who smiles and waves? She hasn't been there this week, and I have felt it. She waves at me, and no matter how I feel, after I see her, I feel better. It makes my day to see her smile. Pam has got no concept about the impact she has. And like loaves and fish, she changes the world because Jesus comes in with her. In the middle is my friend Penny. Just before the summer holidays, Penny fell over. She tripped over her cat and broke both her wrists. And this was her first time back in church last week. So it was a joy for me to see her and to be able to talk to her. And I said, how's it been? And she goes, oh, Mark, oh, Jesus was with me. Well, tell me what you mean, Penny. Well, I went to the hospital and the cleaner was cleaning up and she said, oh, do you mind if I move this book? And I said to her, oh, that's a precious book. And she goes, what do you mean? Is it valuable? She goes, oh, it's priceless. It's my Bible. You can have it if you want, but what it contains will change the world. And while she's in hospital, she spoke about Jesus to her cleaner. She spoke about Jesus to the woman in the next bed next to her. She spoke about Jesus to the nurse. And she led all three of them to Christ in the 7 weeks she was there. How did she do it? She just loved Jesus and she talked about him. She didn't use any fancy 12 steps. She didn't use any pictures or diagrams. She showed no videos. She was just herself. She loved Jesus and she talked about him. The last picture is a coffee shop that's in a garden center down the road from us. And my friend Jenny was there one day and she was sitting with some friends and she noticed that there were other people on other tables sat by themselves. So she went up to the waitress and said, do these people often come in by themselves? And the waitress says, yeah. And my friend Jenny said, that's not right. That's not right. No one should have to come and sit by themselves and have a coffee by themselves and go home by themselves. So she said to the garden centre, can I put a table together just called a chance to chat? And every week she went there in this garden centre and she sat down at the table with a little sign saying chance to chat. And sometimes she would buy them coffee and sometimes they'd bring their own coffee. But she sat and she said, God has given me two ears. He's given me a lifetime of stories and he's given me experience. She changed the world. Did she bring anyone to Jesus? No. Did she bring Jesus to anyone? Absolutely. Every single time she took Jesus out there to where they were. You may think, what can I do? What can I bring? What is it that I can give? All of us have got some sort of loaf and fish that we can use. Sometimes it's money. And we give money and God multiplies it. But let's not get caught up or wrapped up in that being the only thing. It might be that every now and again you give up a Sunday morning to go and help with Sunday school. It might be that you give up a Monday evening to help with Boys Brigade or Girls Brigade. It might be a Friday night to help out with the youth club. It might be a Tuesday to help with Community Cafe. It might be something completely different. So what's the takeaway? I think the takeaway is, what is God laying on your heart to do? no matter where you are, no matter what character you related to in that story, God is calling you to do something. No one is too old. No one is too young. God can use you. The question is, are you prepared to let him? Father God, you are the bringer of truth. You are the one who speaks into our hearts and into our souls. And I pray that you lay on the hearts of those that need to hear this morning the truth about who they are in you. For those who are facing the impossible, that they know that you have got it with them. For those who are feeling overlooked, that they know that they are precious in your sight. For those who are wondering what their years and years of discipleship have done, that you give them joy and that you give them hope. For those who are prepared to be the boy who gave it all, that they take a risk.